follow any rules.
Now, 6 o'clock, I'll be open the work session for April 10th of the Planning Commission. First order of business is call to order, pledge allegiance. Followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next order of business is the planning director's comments.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any comments at this time.
Thank you. Next item of business is public comment section, limited 3 minutes per speaker. Came forward to speak for anything, state your name and address. Anyone wishing to come forward, please come forward at this time. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end the public comment section and go right to the work session. ZTA density updates, name James Newman Planner.
The last meeting y'all had asked us to get some images of what various density units would look like. This evening, this is just again a review, our current density per zoning category, and then density that's specified within our comp plan. For example, the 14 in the Palmyra CPAs should have upwards of 4 dwelling units per acre, whereas Zion Crossroads should have upwards of 10 dwelling units per acre. So this is what a 1 dwelling unit on 2 acres looks like, and this is what's listed as being our rural residential comprehensive plan density maximum.
So is that the...
If you have on the...
Is that a by right density?
That in A1, you have to have at least 2 acres so per dwelling unit.
Okay. And road frontage on a state road?
Yes, yes.
But so the density is 1 unit per 2 acres, though, even though the lot size may be different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there are some differences on like 53 and so forth. Like a 500 foot
not for density.
Road not for density. Density. Density.
Okay.
For road frontage, yes.
And acreage?
No, it's still 2 acres.
Okay.
Yeah. Remember, the difference is that, like, where I live in Two Rivers, the density is less than 1 unit per 2 acres, even though the lots are about 3/4 of an acre. So, because it's a cluster subdivision.
Right.
That one that he just showed, the lot size is 2 acres, and of course the density is 2 acres. But you could have it be 1/4 of that and have the rest of it open space, and it would still be a density of 2 acres, even though the lot size is small.
Now, on 6 going towards Scottsville, there's an R1 there that
yes.
Most of the time we don't realize it, and that's how's that set up? Yeah, does that new thing about the Scottsville...
For R1, they're currently at 1 unit per 1 acre.
Most of those lots are split zoned. The front is
The front is R1, the back is A1.
Yeah.
Okay, I just was trying to figure out whether the new zoning for the Scottsville planning area, whether any of that overlaps with that.
Well, the density, the current density here, this is what the zoning states, this is what we have to have. This is what the comp plan... This table shows what the comp plan would like to have. So this is the aspiration here, and the zoning is what we have.
Okay.
In answer to your question, I don't think it does. I think I think those properties were rezoned to accommodate existing conditions or something. That lots of were non-conforming to 2 acres. I think that's why they did it.
Just as I mentioned, this is the one dwelling unit at 2 acres. This is what it would look like if we had 4 dwelling units per acre, which is what we have listed for the Fort Union, Palmyra, and Scottsville comprehensive plan areas.
Again, to clarify, if you're talking about 1/4 acre lots.
For these particular
for these
ones, that's what it's got.
For these pictures, yeah.
In Rivanna, we've got it as being an aspirational amount of having up to 6 billion units an acre. This is just shy of that amount. This is 5.9, but it gives you, again, an overview of what that density would look like.
It does also include family homes?
Yes. Yes, this is an Washington state. And then finally, Zions Crossroads calls for a density of up to 10 dwelling units per acre. This is just shy of that at 9.3. And it has the houses listed in number 2 are duplexes, the houses listed in number 3 are triplexes, everything else is single family.
I'll tell you another good example of this. If you see the ones along the bottom, single family ones, that density is approximately what you see in north downtown Charlottesville.
What is it over in Belmont, do you know?
It's about the same.
About the same?
It might be a little bigger, actually, but it's about the same.
But Belmont starts being closer to even quarter acre lots.
Yeah, I think it's a little bigger than north downtown.
But density and lot size are not necessarily a direct correlation.
Right. They are an inverse correlation.
Well, yes, but they're not even directly inverse in that.
Not necessarily.
Right. So in this, you know, you got a greater density every place there's a 3 and a 2 and not a 10, 9.3 on the single families, but the aggregate.
That's entirely correct.
Okay. I'm just trying to make sure I understand.
Yeah, that's entirely correct.
And in fact, if we're not talking about single family houses or even duplexes or triplexes, if this turns into townhouses or multifamily, then your open space is going to be quite a bit more.
Right.
So yeah. It will look very different on the ground.
And the one example you have of that in Fluvanna County is the Marina Point condo at the lake. Because that is almost exactly the maximum density. But there's a significant portion of it that was intended to be developed that can't be developed because it was rezoned. So they couldn't do it. But that's a good example. You'll see there's a couple acres that are undeveloped, but the density is 2.9.
Got it.
And the reason that we're talking about this is because right now, outside of a PUD, the most you can get is our R3, 2.9 units per acre. Justin Schimpf, the developer and engineer, I come to y'all asking to make 2.9 the buy rate amount for R3 and have upwards of 10 dwelling units per acre for R3 by a special use permit. We're not recommending that we go forward with that particular language. We're just here to show you what different dwelling unit or density amounts look like, so you can get an idea of if we want to increase the density level in R3, if we want to change density for all of our zoning districts, whatever the commission would like.
So you'd have to have central water and sewer at what point?
Yeah, that's required in R4. That's required if you want to have 2.9 units per 1 acre. You need to have water and sewer. Otherwise, in R4, you can only have 1 unit per 2 acres if you're using like a septic and a well.
But that's true in R1 and R2 as well.
You can use septic in R1 too.
You can, but you can't maximize the density without.
So yeah, there's still a difference in lot sizes.
Yes, you need to have it. It depends if you have the well and septic or if you have centralized water and sewer.
So if you have centralized in R1, you can go to the rural cluster, which is the same density.
It's not rural cluster. The example of the non-rural clusters is Fox Glen, which was rezoned R1.
So your alternative, if you have an R3 piece of land and you want to put 8 dwelling units per acre, a density of 8, is to rezone to a PUD, right?
Yes.
So what he's seeking to do is make it a special use permit as opposed to a
rezone. Above 2.9.
Right now, PUDs are only permitted in Zions Crossroads CPA.
Understand.
So can you change some of that? I mean, one thing that makes this confusing is zoning, and these densities are based on the zoning. The densities are based on zoning, and then our aspirations are based on comp plan community areas.
Yeah.
Can you have rules that apply to R4 zoning in the Scottsville comp plan, community planning area. So in other words, you have a rule for there that doesn't apply to R4 zoning in general for the county.
Well,
I'm not asking if that's a good idea. I'm asking
you can do something like that.
Okay.
You could also, anytime you review a rezoning request, one of the main things you do is look for consistency with the comp plan. So that's, I think, where you grab a hold of that, okay. You know, bring the work.
Yeah. Ideally, after we have the new comp plan, we want to adapt our ordinances to match the comp plan.
Which we didn't.
We're working on.
Is that what we're working on?
Yeah. No, we did just to a significant extent. It was some of it, the last time we did the major revision of the zoning ordinance, some of it was kind of, there wasn't any real need to worry about it, because there was so little of it that it just didn't matter.
Nobody's asking.
And it really didn't matter, because as long as you didn't have the central utilities, you couldn't develop that density anyway. Yeah, when we get, we are now entering the, sort of like me, we're entering the 20th century. The
20th?
Yeah.
Welcome aboard.
remember, we're now talking about having public utilities in portions of the county. So these things would now be
possible.
Yeah,
right.
Legally possible. And practical.
I think the greater densities, having some level, maybe not public, but central water and sewer, is an important aspect of that, because you don't want to have too much density and then not have some control over the possible side effects of wells and septic and those kind of things.
Yeah.
Or maybe just the fact that you have to have some amount of acreage to have those things solves that problem in and of itself. I don't know.
Is there a way that we can have the zoning, or I don't know what it would be, what it would call, that they have to prove the availability of water on a piece of property when it comes to us for an SUP if there's not water available from centralized.
Well, if you recall, that's actually exactly what came up on
Papa Ridge. That's the reason I'm asking the question.
Yeah, and that's what was done. Mm-hmm. That rezoning was conditioned upon compliance with a special use permit for the installation of common utilities.
The thing I was thinking about,
and
it,
they couldn't get.
If we'd have known already that the water wasn't available, would we have had to go through all the stuff we went through with Walker's Ridge and Poplar Ridge?
That was a debate that this commission and the board actually had in that instance. And there was, if you recall, there was a pretty substantial sentiment on, I think it was particularly on the commission, we can't grant this permit unless you show us that you've got the availability of these utilities. And the board was stronger on making it a post-approval condition.
Because we did turn it down, mostly. It seemed like the sentiment was for that reason. That was the final sort of straw. And then the board approved it with the condition.
Board conditioned upon determination of availability of water and sewer.
Because they, a lot of things too, they were using the James River watershed instead of the Rivada watershed, which they should have been using for their studies and so forth like that. And I found out from back in the 90s when a guy that was their water expert had said that there probably wasn't water in that area.
There probably was not, or there was?
Probably was not.
Was not.
But he's right. There was not.
But anyway.
Well, you know, there's another, I thought what you were going to bring up was another issue, and that is with development by right, because Ms. Eager will remember this. One of the proposals, I think it was in the 02 revision to the zoning ordinance, was to require hydrogeologic studies for by right subdivisions. And, you know, so you wouldn't get the I'm coming in with a 2-acre density subdivision, so I've got it by right, and I get in there, lo and behold, I can't find water, or I can't establish the sewer, that we didn't have the alternative systems. And the board, largely at the instance of one of the members that was a developer.
Cecil.
Yeah.
I remember saying that.
Said it's too expensive to do it at that stage. If you get the thing approved, then you know where your lots are and stuff, then you can get a testing done, and you've got some money to finance that. And if you can't get it done, you just can't develop the lot. So that was the choice that the board made. And that's pretty well framed.
There's not an unreasonable argument. Just you have to have some more surety even to get financing to start this process.
It frames the issues. So if you want to maximize the planning benefit, you require the additional data. But that may not be practically necessary. I think that was what the position was. But that's another thing you can do.
In the stuff that you've got up there listed right now, could another choice be simply allow for an SUP to increase density in CPAs up to a certain amount?
I don't know that you could tie it directly to the CPA. You could do something like that.
Okay. Because that last one says modified density for all zoning categories and allow for an SUP increase for density in CPAs. So I don't know whether I would want to modify all densities in all of the categories. That's why I was saying.
Or we could modify some or whatever the commission would like to have.
The real question, it seems to me, is not with R1. Not really with R1, it's with R2 and R4, and to some extent R3. Because if you've got a development, what's consciously a development-oriented zone, like R2 or R4, is our current density reasonable? It's an R2, for example, it's only two units an acre. And that's not much of a development district. And certainly it's not practical for anything other than single family freestanding, detached. Thank you.
I was following you and I wanted to see what you thought you might be reaching for something else.
Frankly, I've always thought that the R4 was kind of a camp because R4 was written for Lake Monticello, and so was R3 at times of 25 years apart. When Lake Monticello was being developed, we didn't have a zoning ordinance. And what I think it's either the historical record would show that R3 was an attempt to provide planned zoning in the county that would accommodate something like Monticello. And the developer wasn't interested in it. It went ahead and developed it without zoning because zoning didn't exist. And he wouldn't provide a plan to allow for R3. So we've got to zone something. So the choice was, well, we'll zone R1, which really didn't make a lot of sense because nothing in Lake Monticello conforms to R1. And so in that, I think it was that same 2002 revision, maybe it was the 92 revision, I'm not sure.
It was 92.
Lake Monticello came in and complained about it and said, we need a district that accommodates us. So we wrote a district for them that would accommodate that pretty much as they wanted, and they rejected it. So we actually had to write another ordinance, and that's what ended up being the R4. And so the R4 density was designed really to accommodate the single-family parts of Lake Monticello. But that's not really a modern development. We're talking about townhouses or whatever. R4 is kind of minimal.
Last week, when you were bringing that up, we were talking about this and this. And was the multifamily, what you had up there last week, was like 10? Or for...
That would be for the...
In the
The PUDs.
I was talking about in the CPA.
In the CPA, Zions Crossroads, according to the comp plan, page 45, says that we should have up to 10 dwelling units per acre.
I'm talking about the new proposal, the possibility of a new proposal because of the thing that Mr. Schiff brought up.
I don't recall. He had wanted to have it so that 2.9 was the by right and that you could get a special use permit to have up to 10 units.
Okay, that's what I was
thinking. You wanted to go through the SUP process.
He was actually looking around 6 to 8.
Okay.
Or whatever he was thinking in that property. I'm not certain about that.
Does he have a property in mind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Of course.
Where is it?
At the intersection of 618 and 53.
It's the property that was rezoned at the roundabout.
The one that we rezoned to business that he said that.
So the front piece of the
business. He wanted to do all the B.
No, now he wants all of it.
He wants all of the
B. He doesn't want to do the B1 at all.
Maybe I'm insanely naive, Fred. Please tell me if I am. But I think our discussions need to center around our comp plan and not what Mr. Schemp wants.
I agree with you, and I'm not necessarily endorsing his proposal.
Right.
I'm glad he made the proposal because it it makes you think about it.
This is sort of the way it typically goes. You have a certain zoning ordinance that has certain densities allowed in each category. And then in your long-range vision, you look in the comp plan about what you think the density should be for each area. And the way you accomplish that is either by the locality itself going in and rezoning, which very rarely occurs, or as developments come in, they rezone to match the comp plan and your vision. And through that rezoning process, you make sure that everything that they're doing meets the other visions in the comp plan as well. Seems to me that an SUP process, at least to me, is too light a process for changing the basic underlying density of a property. It seems to me that if you're going to, you know, go towards something that's a little bit higher density, it seems to me that you would call for a rezoning. That's just my...
Oh, I don't think that he's talking about not having a rezoning. I think he's talking about having a rezoning and a special.
Right, that's what I was just thinking. I think so. He would say, because so much of the percentage of the land is zoned ag. Is going to have to be rezoned 1, 2, 3, or 4. And then he's saying, okay, I can get a bigger density with a special use.
Right now, 6 acres in the front and 20 some in the rear.
Mm-hmm. But if you set it up so that from R1, 2, 3, or 4, from any of those zones, you can rezone to a PUD. Then you've taken care of your density issue if your PUD allows the maximum density in the comp plan.
You certainly do that.
I mean, that just seems like an easier route to do it and then not have to zone an SUP and do all of those things. Well, you just say, on this particular piece of property, we want to do a planned unit development. Here's how we want to lay it out. These are what all the adjacencies are and how this matches or doesn't, you know, match with the comp plan, the adjacent properties, and boom. I mean, it just seems to be a much clearer and cleaner way of doing it. That, you know, you might say somebody might come in for a rezoning from A1 to R2 and an SUP for a higher density, and you say, okay, well, in the context of this, it makes sense to rezone to an R2, but we're not going to approve your SUP. I mean, it can be messy.
No, you're right, but one of the things that he's brought up and I think he's right, is that our conventional districts don't have enough density, or at least some of them, at least the R4.
For by right density.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, wouldn't break my heart to say that R4, you know, I don't have a number in mind, but instead of 2.9, the maximum density ought to be, you know, 5.9 or 6, you know, whatever.
But that's a by right density?
Yeah. But it's by right subject to provision of utilities.
Right. And with that 6, would that include multifamily or would that only single family?
R4 includes multifamily.
And it was up to like a 6.
Yeah, and you know, we do have limited examples in the county, but I don't mean to be belaboring Marina Point, but that's a perfect example because that was always contemplated as and designed as multifamily. Yeah, it was going to have 2 multifamily buildings. They couldn't build the second one because of the density issue. They're condos, so they can use the maximum density. That's not an unreasonable proposal in that area. I'm not saying the neighbors like it necessarily, but you know, it's got water and sewer, and the land is available. Roads are presumably adequate, and that sort of thing. What would happen if we just said maximum density in R4 is, you know, fill in the blank, 6 units an acre, whatever we want to say. Then you could have a multifamily building or townhouses or whatever it might be that wouldn't be necessarily part of a planned development. Obviously, as you know, Ms. Cutless, the downside of a planned development is the front-end cost. And if you got, you know, you got 3 acres of R4, a PUD is impractical. The front-end cost is too high. They actually do that in the city of Charlottesville, and it ends up with some of the most nonsensical results you can imagine. Because people will do that. They'll bring in 2 or 3 acres, and they'll have a PUD on it. And it's very expensive, and the city likes to micromanage things, and you can do it that way. But it ends up, people wonder why there's no quote-unquote affordable housing in the city of Charlottesville. There's one reason, because the development costs are very high.
I'm not sure that it doesn't make sense, though, to raise the bar for costs when you're maximizing development on these properties. You know, we're not talking commercial development, we're talking residential, which is certainly not a money maker or benefit to the county in a lot of ways. Want to come up, you know, when you're talking about getting to 6 dwelling units per acre, having some control over the layout, to me, makes a little bit of sense. Where's your open space? You know, where, you know, which, and you lose control of that in a by right development.
No question about it. So you have less control of that. The issue is, if you're concerned about allowing rental housing in the county, which is one of the things in the plan
for, yes, it's that multifamily and, yeah,
Affordable housing, but it might be single family, but rental housing. That's where the cost becomes important. And so far, in a place like the city of Charlottesville, it hasn't made any difference because, you know, people will spend ridiculous amounts of money on a piece of land or a dwelling in the city of Charlottesville that doesn't serve the market that we're looking at. And particularly doesn't serve the need for affordable housing and affordable rental housing. So that's where you get, you know, that's I guess that illustrates the tension involved.
Could you take, like, on the R4, leave the wording as it is, then say up to 6 per unit, per acre with a SUP?
Yeah, you can do that.
and could, like, for instance, in all of that, you would require that they have centralized water?
No, you already do that. We already require
okay.
that.
Okay.
For if you want to have that 2.9 an acre, yeah. you need to have the centralized water and sewer. Okay. Otherwise, you're back to the
would that, standards. Well, what I just asked that, would that be practical? Or would that be, you give a buy right in the R4 of the way it is now, but with an SUP up to 6 or 8 or whatever this we decided on?
I think the answer to that is, would it be practical? Yeah, I think it'd be practical. Does that serve our objective is set out in the comprehensive plan and y'all's and the board of supervisors' vision of what the county and how the county will develop. If you want low income, you know, quote unquote affordable housing, and particularly if you want affordable rental housing, you've got to increase the density.
And that's not a bad thing to aspire for, even in Fabana County, because right now there's a block of affordable housing in Columbia that is essentially slums. And I'm not saying we can solve that with this, but there is some evidence that maybe there is a lack of affordable housing in Fabana County.
Columbia is a perfect example of a development that occurred long before zoning,
right,
that created nothing but nonconformities. There's not a single parcel in Columbia, former town of Columbia, that complies with the zoning. And there's probably not one without vacating some property lines. There's probably not one that could comply, because there's certainly no sewer. There could be some water, but you can't put no sewer. And that's, you know, that's one place it might be appropriate to have. As I recall, the original lots are half acre, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
When the town was platted originally in the 1820s, they were half acre lots. And like a lot of subdivisions in those days, it was contemplated that I would buy that half acre lot and then I might divide it, or I might buy two or three of them and just, you know, develop them together. That's the way Columbia has developed. Now, Columbia had a zoning ordinance, so at one point there was some development in Columbia, but the county didn't have a say over it because it was a separate municipality had its own zoning ordinance, which seems to have disappeared.
It did.
I used to have a copy of it, but I don't know where it is.
Well, how did Sycamore Square get the units it has in front, the attached homes?
The building type is permitted.
The what?
The building type is permitted.
Townhouses in Sycamore Square. But what about the density in Sycamore Square? Is it?
I don't remember. Do you know that? Mm-hmm. But I think it's a 2.9 units an acre.
Wasn't that originally supposed to be commercial?
I believe so.
Part of it. Yeah.
Something happened.
I remember part of it came as a rezoning.
It was. I think the second set of townhouses that was built was supposed to be commercial.
That changed since I was on the board for the past 5 years.
But is that considered affordable? The Sycamore Square townhouses? I don't know what they're renting.
I'll ask Mr. Robinson. He looked in there when he was in the
townhouses. Well, no, they're not affordable.
Oh, okay.
Or at least the worth the money is up.
Yeah.
That's it. Worth the affordable price.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at affordable housing. If you're talking about a basic three-bedroom house with maybe two bathrooms, that's not affordable housing. The only way that's affordable is if it's some kind of subsidy, because you can't build it for the price that a teacher's aide, for example. can't afford that.
Yeah, I'm not sure a developer coming in, even at 6 dwelling units per acre, is going to build affordable housing.
Right.
One of the ways you get affordable housing is you bump the density up to 10, 12, 15 units per acre, and you require affordable housing as part of the rezoning process.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
That's probably true. I think there may be places in this county where you could have a relatively small parcel, say 2 acres or half, something like that, where you could actually put either multifamily or single family attached at a density that would be conceivably affordable in that small scale. But again, then you're talking about a non-planned district, because the development cost would be too high.
Right. If it's just building the roads is phenomenal. So we can go up to 5 foot lots on a private road cluster. But to me, that right now is our only affordable housing possible because of the road.
Can y'all remind me of something? I can't think of it right now. What does MHP stand for?
Mobile home park.
Okay.
We don't have one. We have a mobile home park, but it's not under this ordinance.
It's under grandfather.
Whatever it is. I remember writing that chapter.
I just couldn't.
It didn't apply.
I knew what it was, but I couldn't remember.
We have one guy come in, an older gentleman, who developed a lot of the property in Louisa area Zions. We're talking about when he rezones some land up near the crossroads to MHP, but I haven't heard from him in a couple of years.
Ago? You said a couple of years
ago? It was a couple of years ago. He came and talked to me in Steve Tugwell.
The land is too valuable right now to be on the home park.
That's the thing. If you're at Zion Crossroads or urban Albemarle County or the city of Charlottesville, the land itself puts you out of the market for affordable housing. That's where our affordable housing conceivably could come in, is if you had, well, like that land down in Scottsville, we're talking about the R1 down there. That land, I don't know what it's assessed at, but that could conceivably be at a low enough level that the land would not be prohibitive to develop it at a more, I hate using the word affordable, level. But what to do with this is really... It's a policy decision. That's up to you all.
Well, maybe a place to start is to get some ideas of what is trading in the county, what raw land is trading for. Because if you want affordable housing and an acre is $10,000 or more, you've got to build a really small little home. That acreage. And I think home builders they feel good about maybe something that's $30,000 an acre, but it's higher than that.
What does the rest of y'all think about what I suggest as far as for?
Say it again.
Leave the R4 as it is, but have an exception up to, say, 6 or 8 units per acre with a special use permit.
And with sewer and water?
Well, they said that's already
applied. Yes, if you don't have sewer and water, you're restricted to one
so just,
per
but
two.
We need to maintain that to put this change.
That's yeah, so here's a section 22-8-3, subsection B, and that's for lots that have both central or public water and sewer. So we could change that number from 2.9 to higher, or we could keep it at 2.9 and have it so that you could use a special use permit to get up to 6, 8, whatever number y'all would like.
So for right now, most of our R4 zoning, or all of it, is in Lake Monticello.
The majority, yeah.
It was written.
So we're talking about properties outside Lake Monticello that would have to be rezoned to R4.
Yes.
And then get a special use permit.
Yes.
So they'd have to go through a two-step process.
Well, one of the things that has, I know I've thought about it, is applying R4 to all a part of the town of Columbia. And of course that would involve utilities, but I'm not telling you that's impossible on a small scale. But you want it to be dense,
right,
to minimize the percentage of the development cost that was represented by the land.
But doesn't Aqua already serve Columbia?
Aqua does, but sewer's the issue.
Now, how did they do the sewer then?
They don't.
You don't want to know. Neither does DEQ.
Let's put it this way. There's some interesting smells.
Okay.
I wonder whether Barry's idea is the best one or not, but certainly I wonder if, like, do this in steps and say, you know what, we can solve and identify a problem with, we need greater density in first area, in some area, let's change the R4, maybe to your proposal, and then see if that leads to anything. And if it doesn't, I'm not sure, we should be looking ahead, I agree that. I'm not sure there's any current need for any of this except for Mr. Shim.
Well,
maybe there is. Maybe we'll find out.
Mr. Hammer. That Marina Point, Mr. Hammer was the original developer, and he proposed this and got the condo approved at a time when the zoning allowed it. And then the zoning was changed before the second part of it was developed. And he actually went through a whole proceeding in the BZA. The BZA sustained that position for the county. They appealed it. And the appeal was dismissed. So we're solid on the law as the existing situation. But he has now come back and said, I had this vision for this back in the 70s or whenever it was, and I want to do it now. So there is some actual demand for that. And one thing that makes it attractive is they have water and sewer because it's in the lake. So my suggestion would be, if you're going to do R4, you certainly ought to at least do R3 as well, because R3 you've got control over because it's planned district. And then, of course, the PUD is 6 units and up for a PUD.
Do we need to think about this a while and talk to them about this a while? What I'm saying that is, if we don't do something pretty quick, we're not going to get to the part about the BZA fees tonight. Or should we continue this discussion now? Or
the BZA fees shouldn't really take that long.
Well, it'll take about 5 minutes.
It gives you 13 minutes.
Well, you know, you got my suggestion on the table. Mr. Payne suggested we do the same thing for the R3. So,
if we allow density increases by an SUP, what is the density number that you would like that?
Well, I was thinking either 6 or 8, but that would be something that, that may be not what it should be. I really don't know.
And what would be the difference on the ground between R3 and R4 with an SUP to 6 dwelling units per acre and a PUD at 6 dwelling units per acre? What would the differences on the ground be in terms of requirements of the filter? That's something that you have to look at, because obviously the builder is going to make a decision which way they're going to go. Even if we had an SUP up to 6, he'd have to look at them, and I wonder which is more advantageous to him and or the county.
Well, right now we only allow PUDs up in design crossroads. planning area, so outside of that, they're not allowed.
And we purposely did that.
That's a recent change. That's a recent change after the dust up over Walker Ridge and everything, and people saying this kind of development.
Because essentially, we only wanted that kind of development up in Zion.
That's right. We didn't want it anywhere else.
But if we allow it by SUP in R3 and R4, we're saying it's fine other places.
But it's not as high, because they can get up to 6.
And in that tan-colored area that comprises the rest of Zion Crossing. The red is the UDA, that's the urban development area.
The UDA is in the CPA, but it only extends partially.
So you can have higher density anywhere in the...
Anywhere from that, up the upper tan for Zion Crossing.
But what I'm proposing is less than what you allowed in the PUD.
Townhouses and multifamily, we call it.
Okay.
Then do you make a distinction in the R3 and the R4 between single-family townhouses and multifamily?
No.
I mean, that's the next question.
Well...
You have in the PUD.
Yes. You wouldn't need to. I'd say you could control that with the special use permit. So if you wanted to have 6 units an acre, the developer wanted to have 6 units an acre, and he came in with let's say he wanted to have a multifamily building with 1 acre and he's got six units in it, and he's going to leave everything in open space except the building, that might be desirable in this case.
So what we would have to have a set of conditions, you know, standard sort of criteria for an S&P for this increase in density.
And that would be the process, like if it was duplexes, say if it was 6, you could have like 3 duplexes, or you could do.
He says it's okay?
I mean, you'd have to establish the criteria.
You'd have to work it out.
We can drive something and have it for y'all. Excellent.
I think it's important to look at the criteria.
Okay.
A distinction being, too, that you can put conditions on an SUP that you can't necessarily do on a zoning. So there's pluses and minuses to both directions. But I'd like to see the amount of control we could have on both of those to make sure.
You are 100% correct.
Mm-hmm. We can come back with something that's more substantial and bring the discussion back up next month.
And we'd have to decide whether we want to go 6 or 8, so... Which would be the most logical.
6 or 8 or something else.
Yeah. That's true.
Maybe the SUP, you could have allowed for the maximal flexibility, even something up to 12, but the SUP could dictate that on an individual basis.
I remember my conversation with the county attorney in Arlington County many years ago when Albemarle had just gone to a maximum density of 15 units an acre in its, you know, pie in the sky dense development. And the county attorney in Arlington County looked at me and kind of laughed, and he said, that's what we consider medium density.
Yeah. Okay, you're just going to bring something back to us at the next meeting, and we can have some further discussion. That'll be at the work session.
Yes.
Okay. So I reckon we'll go to the BCA fees. I guess the meeting gets to do that, too.
To do everything tonight. All right, so we have 3 types of applications that go to our Board of Zoning Appeals. A variance, an appeal to the zoning administrator, or an interpretation of maps. We haven't had one of those in quite some time, so the ones that we're focusing on tonight are the fee for a variance and the fee for the appeal to the zoning administrator. If you look at our variance fee, it's pretty much in line with all of our neighboring counties at a cost of $550. However, the cost of an appeal of the zoning administrator is only $125. And this is a table shows our staff costs for myself, Mr. Robinson, Ms. Cuthler, and then Mr. Miller. We have different parts to play in processing an application, and the total cost for staff is around $530.
And this was developed by Martin Brookhart, who was our spreadsheet guru, who was the management analyst last year.
Yes.
There's ways to other feeds, so he put a lot of thought and time into coming up with this.
And his break-even rate, based on the time that area staff members spend is $530. So both the variance and the appeal go to the BZA.
But that doesn't count the advertising.
That doesn't count the advertisement cost. So, for example, we have a case that's going to the BZA next week. The cost to run the ads for that is $157. And if you look at the appeal cost, it's only $125. So our appeal cost, the application fee, doesn't even cover ads, let alone staff time. So what we're proposing is that we increase the appeal of the zoning administrator fee to that of our variance, $550. It doesn't completely break even, but we're not trying to price people out of these applications. We're just trying to make it so that the county doesn't lose as much money and is better compensated for the time that staff spends working on these applications.
So why would we go to what it actually costs?
That would be roughly $700.
We can make the case that, you know, this is their job. They're getting a salary for this. And if there are no BZA cases, they're still getting that same salary. So maybe it's not wrong for the county to put some of that.
Or $125 for an appeal. That's a bargain rate for people to appeal almost anything the cleaning office does.
I mean, and given the crushing load at the BZA, that this is going to make a lot of money.
Share.
This is going to make a lot of money in the county. I'm telling you that right now. It's going to balance the books.
Okay. One last year. Yeah.
We're going on three this
I
year.
I don't have any problem with that.
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
We've got to recover costs. I mean, you know, budgets are important, and you recover as much cost as you can. It also avoids frivolous action.
So the $550, I have to explain it that way. Sounds reasonable.
I mean, I think you do have to recover certainly your variable costs, not necessarily your fixed costs.
You don't want to price people out of their due process rates, but you want to
have a balance. Everybody around us will way higher than what we charge.
For
$125 is probably a lot of money. 30, 40 years ago compared to
last
now.
Last time we said this.
Yeah. Oh, it's Confederate money.
Yeah. Does anybody have any objections to that
point? And then we have a motion for you all at our, I believe, underneath the new business section of the PowerPoint later on.
To initiate a zoning text amendment.
Gotcha.
That's it.
Now 7 o'clock, we'll call it to order the regular meeting session for the Planning Commission for April 10th, 2018. The first order of business is the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next order of business is the director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple items to report. March 28th, meeting the Board of Supervisors voted to reject ZMP 1705 Richmond Hill Richmond Road LLC in regards to the rezoning from A1 to I1 and I2 industrial. And also they voted to approve 5-0 SUP 1801 Amber Hill LLC, which is LKQ, 5-0. That's all I have to report this morning.
Any questions? Thank you. The next is that first of two public comment sections for the night. Anyone wishing to come forward at this time, you'll be limited to 3 minutes. State your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the first public comment section for the night and go to our minutes for the March 13, 2018. There was some changes made earlier today, so there was one that I noticed of where they attributed something to me that actually Ms. Eager said, so, but it's already been changed.
Yeah, there was also one word that wasn't, that I said that was I said merely, and it came out nearly, and I think that's already been changed too.
So do I have any motion about the minutes or questions about the minutes?
Motion accept the minutes.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Lagostino.
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay, the next item is a public hearing. ZTA 1802 telecommunication facilities fees.
Good evening. As mentioned at the work session last month, we have different fees listed within our ordinance for our telecom applications. Section 2217.7 states that the fee is $1,500 for the county plus $5,500 for the consultant review, whereas Section 2227.14 says that a third-party review is $4,000. Neither of those, that $5,500 or that $4,000 fee, would apply to our current consultant, who is the Atlantic Group. They've taken over from Cityscape. The Atlantic Group currently charges $900 for a co-location or modification to a tower and $3,200 for a new tower. What we propose to do is explicitly state that new towers require a special use permit, plus a site development plan, any mailing costs, and just the generic consultant review fee. The towers already are required as a special use permit in all zoning categories, so this isn't new language, or just making it more clear here. And that new towers would require a cost of $550, which is the cost of a minor site plan. This money would go to the county for our part of the review, plus any applicable mailing costs, and again, the general consultant review fee. So this is the language that we've proposed adding. And this is the other language in regards to the fee of $4,000. You just scrap that out, as well as another fee that was listed there, a fee of $1,800. And this just states that the county can require the applicant to pay for the technical review of a third-party expert. And we have our motion.
Basically, because of the new consultant, the fees are actually going
down. These are lower now. And if we change to a different consultant in the future, with this language, we don't have to come back before you all on the board if any future consultants have a different fee schedule.
Anybody have any questions, or do I have a motion?
We have to have a public hearing first.
Okay. Sorry. I forgot about that.
Did you get the sign-up sheet?
In order. We'll open the public hearing at this time. Anyone coming forward, state your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the public hearing at this time and go to discussion by the Planning Commission.
I just have one question. I noticed on the transactions by user report that there are two SCPs for telecommunication tower and telecommunication tower consultant review, each of which are listed at $900, that were submitted in March. I just wondered how those fees were derived. They didn't seem to match up with any of these numbers, and I wasn't sure.
It might be a categorization issue with how we take fees. We have a new system that we're working with, EnerGov. I'm not the one who handles that, but those were only for co-locations, modifications or additions, which is in line with the $900 fee. We haven't received any special use permits for a brand new tower in quite some time. So the fees, the $900 fees that are on that report, are correct.
As of the current ordinance, not the new proposal.
Well, based on what our third-party review, the Atlantic Group, charges. They only charge $900, so we've only been collecting $900.
So for others, we've been collecting $900, even though the ordinance said $4,000.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
This whole discussion was triggered by a complaint that was made by one of the tower companies that wanted to, and y'all correct me if I get this wrong, but they wanted to put additional equipment on an existing tower. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, obvious that you needed to have an engineering study to make sure that the tower was good enough to do it. But that apparently is a pretty simple thing. And this tower was, I think it was obviously sufficient, even though it needed a certification, but it wasn't a big job. And our consultant at the time was going to charge $4,000 for it. And the complaint was, you need to put in something that reflects actual, more nearly the actual cost of the review rather than having this arbitrary $4,000.
Well, at that point, that consultancy was $4,000, so it wasn't.
When that was written, yes, but now we have different consultants, right, and they've got their own fee schedule.
Which seems to make sense, having different consultants.
Almost every other consultant.
Yes, Jim.
Was another complaint we had.
That's interesting. Okay.
Almost every other consultant that
was cheaper.
Yes,
and these people did the bids better than we did.
Yeah, this makes sense to me to come in line with costs, and as may change from time to time.
Do I have a motion about this?
I'll make it. I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of ZTA 1802 to amend Chapter 22, Article 17, and Article 27 of the Luvetta County Code by certain amendments to sections and subsections 22.17.7 and 22.27.14 thereof, amending the Luvetta County Zoning Ordinance. The public purpose of these amendments is to update the fee schedule for telecommunication facilities.
I have a motion by Mrs. Costa Lesta. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second for Mr. Johnson. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay, the next item is our 2017 Development Activity Report.
The Open Activity Report studies the long-term trends over a period of 15 years in regards to land use, special use permit, site plans, things of that nature, so we can see where the county is going. So this just shows the approximate acreage that we have for our planning areas. As you can see, over half the county is within our rural preservation planning areas. A small percentage is designated as CPAs, and the rest is as rural residential planning areas, and these help guide our decisions for development. We had 85 building permits for new homes in 2017. This was a decrease from 2016, and they're rather evenly split between homes in the rural residential areas and our community planning areas, and the remainder, 24 homes, were in rural preservation. We had 25 new lots that were created through the subdivision process. This is an increase from what we had in 2016. Five of those lots were in community planning areas, six were in rural residential planning areas, and the rest were in rural preservation. We had 9 site plans, which is a decrease from the 18 that we had in 2016. But in some good news, 80% of the site plans were in our designated growth areas, such as Zion Crossroad, like Monticello, Fort Union, etc. We had 5 special use permits, and 3 of those were located within designated growth areas. There are 5 rezoning applications. 3 were approved, 1 was withdrawn, and another was denied. We also had 5 zoning text amendments last year. 4 were approved and 1 was withdrawn, and the Board of Zoning Appeals granted 1 variance. We had 32 code compliance complaints last year. Out of those 32, 30 were resolved. One had an extension and 1 was pending a permit. And you can see from the breakdown, we had 12 complaints in the Palmyra Election District, 8 in the Columbia Election District, 8 in Cunningham, and then 5 in Fort Union, but no complaints in the Rivanna District. And finally, there were 19 agricultural and forestal districts, which cover about 11.1% of Luvetta County. No new districts were created in 2017. Just under 60% of the county is enrolled in the land use taxation program. That's it.
And there's a motion up there because of the fact about the state we're required to have a report every year, a yearly report. So we've been using this as our yearly report. So have a motion to approve this, deny this, defer this activity report as submitted?
Sure, I move to approve the 2017 development activity report as submitted.
Have a motion to accept by Mr. Zimmer. Have a second?
I have a question.
Okay.
Before I can vote, if that's possible.
Okay.
On page 53, where we talk about the conservation easements, there's a table that's empty. I just wanted to, you know, we talked about, you know, there are six, I assume, easement holding entities is what we're talking about, and those are listed, and that said the county itself had four conservation easements. By the way, I appreciated all the metrics and read through them. Very informative and interesting. But when I got to this, I wanted to know where the four conservation easements were and how much acreage was in each. And the table was empty, and I just...
Oh, that's... The table is if there are any new applications. It says 2016. That should be corrected to 2017. Did you receive any new applications for conservation easements in 2017?
Okay.
A map of conservation easements is on page 55.
Okay.
So the next page over that.
Yeah. I was just looking for more of a breakdown than that, but okay. Cool. All right, so this should be 2017.
Yes, so I'll make a change for the Board of Supervisors for next week.
We can add more detail next year.
Yeah.
Do I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer to approve? I have a second by Mr. Longacino.
I assume that the motion and the second include the correction.
Absolutely.
Which includes the correction from 2016 to 2017 on page 53.
Yeah, 53 and 55.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. And I commend you for that report. It looked very well.
Wonderful.
Okay, we don't have any other business listed, but
we have the motion for the initiation of the new business for the BCA fees.
Okay. We have a motion about the BCA fees. Do I have a motion from anyone about that?
I'll do it. I move that the Savannah County Planning Commission direct staff to initiate a zoning text amendment to amend section 2217-7 fees, to amend the fees for applications to the Board of Zoning Appeals, and to schedule a future public hearing for formal Planning Commission consideration and recommendation to the Board of Supervisors.
Okay, I have a motion by Mrs. Costa-Lessa. Do I have a second?
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that you add to that motion the public purpose to be served by the amendment, and that public purpose might be to make the fees reflect actually the costs of the transaction.
I'd say to make the fees more closely reflect the actual cost.
I think that's perfectly right.
We'll change the motion to reflect what Mr. Costa-Lessa just said. Mr. Longacino, agree with that? Okay, so we still have
I would just say to bring the fees in line with costs, something like that.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mrs. Costa-Lessa and a second by Mr. Longacino. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Do we have any other new business that we need to go over? Well, if there's no objection from anyone on the Planning Commission or planning staff, we will end the meeting at 7:17.